Thank you. So I apologise for not being there in Singapore, but I got off a flight from Zurich at midnight last night, so wasn't quite able to turn around and get to Singapore this morning. Today I am going to talk about the Foreign Exchange Global Code. The code is on track to be released in 2 months' time at the end of May, and this is the culmination of 2 years' effort involving considerable input from a sizable number of FX market participants, both public and private. So what I'd like to do today is reiterate the motivation for the work we have been doing on the code, why you should all be interested in it, and then update you on where we are at with the process and outline the way forward. So as I hope most of you already know, phase one of the code was launched in May last year in New York. And the text of that is pretty easy to find. It's either on the BIS website, or in Singapore, at least it's on the Singapore Foreign Exchange Committee website, or on the MAS website. The text of the complete code will be available in the same places from the 25th of May after its public release in London. So why is this work going on? As I've stated on a number of occasions before, the foreign exchange industry has been suffering from a lack of trust in its functioning. This lack of trust is evident both between participants in the market and, at least as importantly, between the public and the market. The market needs to move towards a more favourable and desirable location and allow participants to have much greater confidence that the market is functioning appropriately. A well-functioning FX market is very much in the interests of all market participants. This clearly includes us as central banks, both in our own role as market participants, but also because the exchange rate is an important channel of monetary policy transmission. So in a globalised world, the FX market is one of the most vital parts of the financial plumbing. So the Global Code sets out global principles of good practice in the FX market to promote a common set of guidance to the market, including in areas where there is a degree of uncertainty about what sort of practices are acceptable and what are not. And this, we hope, should help to restore confidence and promote the effective functioning of the wholesale FX market. To that end, one of the guiding principles underpinning our work is that the code should promote a robust, fair, liquid, open, and transparent market. A diverse set of buyers and sellers, supported by a resilient infrastructure, should be able to confidently and effectively transact at competitive prices that reflect available market information and in a manner that conforms to acceptable standards of behaviour. So the work to develop the code commenced 2 years ago in May 2015, when the BIS governors commissioned a working group of the Markets Committee of the BIS, which I used to chair up until January this year, to facilitate the establishment of a single global code of conduct for the wholesale FX market and to come up with mechanisms to promote greater adherence to the code. So our group comprises representatives of the central banks of all the major foreign exchange centres. Cindy Mock from the MAS has made a major contribution to the process and is very much the person you should speak to in the Singapore market about the code. Elsewhere in the Asian region, the central banks of China, Hong Kong, Japan and Korea, as well as my own country, Australia, have been very much active on the group. This work is also a public-private partnership. We've been ably and vigorously supported in this work by a group of market participants chaired by David Poof, who's CEO of CLS, and I think Rachel Hoey speaking next from CLS, so David is Rachel's boss. David's group contains people from all around the world on the buy side, including corporates and asset managers, and the sell side, along with trading platforms, ECNs and non-bank participants, drawing from the various foreign exchange committees around the world. So all parts of the market have been involved in the drafting of the code to make sure all perspectives are heard and are appropriately reflected. And there are two important points worth highlighting. First, it's a single code for the whole industry, and second, it's a global code. So on the first point, the code is supplanting the existing codes that have been present in the FX market, including in Singapore, the Blue Book that is currently used. And in my country, Australia, and in other countries, the ACI model code is being supplanted by the global code. And in fact, yesterday the ACI announced that adherence to the global code will be a prerequisite of ACI membership going forward. Importantly, the code covers all of the wholesale FX industry. This is a code for not just for the sell side. It is there for the sell side, the buy side, non-bank participants and the platforms. Its breadth fits both across the globe and across the whole structure of the industry. So hence the code, I think, should be relevant for all of you here in the room at this conference. The way it is relevant, though, will depend on the nature of your engagement with the market. The guidelines for appropriate conduct are relevant for the buy side as well as the sell side. On the buy side, it will also help to give you guidance as to what you can reasonably expect from your counterparty as you transact your FX business. What this means in practice is that the steps different market participants take to align their activities with the principles articulated in the code will necessarily reflect the size, complexity, type, and extent of their engagement with the FX market. So as I mentioned earlier, the first phase of the code was released in May last year. And that first phase covered areas such as ethics, information sharing, aspects of execution, as well as confirmation and settlement. The second phase, which will be released with the full code in May, covers further aspects of execution, including e-trading and platforms, prime brokerage, as well as governance and risk management and compliance. We have provided market participants with a number of opportunities to comment on the code along the way, in addition to receiving the direct input of the market participants group chaired by David Puth. So over the past few months, drafts of the full text of the code have been distributed to market participants for their review, principally through the various FXCs, including the Singapore FXC, but also through other industry associations to ensure all perspectives are appropriately reflected in the code. And through this process, over the last couple of months, quite a few thousand comments have been received. So in my view, the text of the code provides the best and most appropriate guidance we could give, given the sometimes wide range of feedback received, particularly on those small number of issues which are most controversial in the market. And the most obvious and current example of this is around last look, which has generated considerable and passionate discussion. I would expect that discussion to continue after the release of the code in May, and that the code might evolve going forward as a function of that discussion. I would like to make the point that if market participants think it would be preferable for the code to have gone further, they are more than welcome to go down that path in their operations. On the other hand, it would not be desirable for the converse to occur, namely for market practices to fall short of the principles outlined in the code. That said, I think it is a good outcome of the process that we were able to distill the points of contention in the market down to a small number of issues, even though they're not so insignificant. So outside of a small number of contentious areas, the feedback was reflective of a widely held consensus. Market participants have recognised the code's aim of helping move the FX market to a better place. I'll try to illustrate that with a couple of areas that were addressed in the first phase of the code. So one of the topics we covered that we thought the market was looking for guidance on sooner rather than later, and that was potentially having an adverse effect on market functioning, was around information sharing, where many participants have highlighted that they are unsure what information can be conveyed to counterparties and other market participants. While it is clear, or at least I think it should be, that disclosing the details of a client's order book to a counterparty is not acceptable, market participants have noted that there is much less clarity around what level of aggregation, say, is necessary in order to convey market colour appropriately. As a result, it appeared some market participants were being very conservative in sharing information, and that can have adverse implications for the effective functioning of the market. So what we did was take some material which was already existing in a global preamble put out by the Global Foreign Exchange Committees in March 2015, and fleshed that out quite a bit more, including with examples of what is and isn't appropriate communication and why. So we've tried to give people greater clarity about what sort of information can be shared and what sort of information can't be shared. Similarly, there have been diverse opinions around what is appropriate behaviour in terms of order handling. And there have been some very public instances of inappropriate behaviour around order handling and information sharing over the last few years. So the market is seeking greater guidance as to what principles should be followed, including the different standards that may apply, depending on whether you're acting in the market as a principal or an agent. And this is one area that was not adequately covered in the pre-existing codes that have been out there in the market for a number of years. And it is in an area we are aiming to provide the sought-after guidance. But we are not writing a procedures manual for order handling. Rather, what the code does is articulate principles that need to be taken into account. Individual firms may then take those principles and reflect them in their own procedures manuals. Our aim in articulating these principles is to provide market participants with the framework in which to think about how they handle stop-loss orders, say. And the emphasis here is very much on the word think. We're actually requiring traders and market participants to think, which is possibly a foreign concept, but nevertheless something which they should do. The Global Code will not provide the answers to all your questions, but it should help you ask the right questions. So alongside drafting the code, we have also been devoting considerable time and effort to thinking about how to ensure widespread adherence to the code by market participants. Clearly, that has been an issue with the various existing codes that have been out there for a number of years. It is evident that those existing codes were ignored on occasion, willfully or otherwise. One of our central aims in drafting the code is for it to be principles-based rather than rules-based. And there are a number of reasons why this is so, but for me, an important reason is that the more prescriptive the code is, the easier it is to get around. Rules are much easier to arbitrage than principles. So the general attitude, which seems to have been there going back over the last few years, is if it's not explicitly banned or explicitly discouraged, then it must be okay. That is not the sort of mindset we want to have going forward. The more prescriptive and the more precise the code is, the less people will think about what they are doing. That's why we have chosen not to go down that path. If it's principles-based and less prescriptive, then market participants will have to think about whether their actions are consistent with the principles of the code. So we're working with the industry to produce a principles-based code rather than a set of prescriptive regulatory standards. The code will not impose legal or regulatory obligations on market participants, nor will it supplant existing regulatory standards or expectations. But we do expect the principles in the code to be understood and adopted across the entire FX market. So our approach to adherence has a number of dimensions, and we outlined some of these in New York in May last year, and when we release the code in May in London, we'll provide a more comprehensive description of the suite of adherence mechanisms that are going to be in place. So one critical dimension is market-based adherence mechanisms. An important element of discipline should come from the market itself, and we're working closely with the market participants on this. The adherence to a voluntary code will only come about if firms judge it to be in their interests and take the practical steps to ensure the code is embedded in their practices. So some of those practical steps would be things like training your staff and putting in appropriate policies and procedures. We have provided a draft statement of commitment for firms to publicly demonstrate their adherence to the code. One reason for a public demonstration is that firms are more likely to adhere to the code if they believe that their peers are doing so too. So without blaming them for what occurred, more scrutiny from counterparties about how their FX transactions are being executed may also help to reduce the incidence and severity of the market abuses that occurred in the past. FX transactions in a number of businesses were often regarded as ancillary to the core business, notwithstanding the potential impact. So ultimately, the success of the code in promoting integrity and restoring confidence in the wholesale market lies in the hands of its participants on all sides of the market. Similarly, the Global Foreign Exchange Committees have issued a joint statement of support at the launch of the code in New York last year and will do so again at the time of the launch of the code in May this year. And the intention is to make adherence to the code a requirement of Foreign Exchange Committee membership. So that would ensure the code is embedded at the core of the foreign exchange market, but it is also important that it extends beyond that and that there is, at the very least, an awareness of it across all market participants. A second dimension of adherence is that the BIS central banks have signalled their commitment by announcing that they themselves will follow the code and that they expect their counterparties will do so too. So, for instance, in our part, the Reserve Bank of Australia will no longer transact in the FX market with those that don't commit to adhere to the code following its release in May. A third dimension of adherence is that we've been talking to regulators in our various jurisdictions as to how they might use the code in monitoring market conduct. Here in Australia, the securities regulator is very supportive of the development of the code and is considering how it might use it in its market surveillance. Similarly, the FCA in the UK is considering how they might incorporate the code in the senior managers regime in place there. I know that in Singapore, the MAS is undertaking similar thinking. Given that we're only providing the full text of the code to the market as a whole in May, there will be a period of time for the market participants to adjust their practices where necessary, and I'm hoping that in most cases that shouldn't be too much, to be in line with the principles of the code. So this period of time might potentially be as short as 6 months, but it certainly won't be longer than 12 months for the vast majority of market participants. How much effort will be required will in part depend on the nature and extent of your engagement with the foreign exchange market. In drafting the code, we have always kept the principle of proportionality at front of mind. That is, the extent to which the code applies to you is very much a function of how much you actually interact with the market. So we are on track to complete the code so that it will be released in London in May. At the end of that process, for the code to be effective and for it to achieve what we want it to achieve, it will need to be accepted and endorsed across the full spectrum of market participants. So I ask you all as participants in the FX market to familiarise yourself with the principles of the code and establish that your operations in the market align with them. That said, the process does not really end because as the FX market continues to evolve, the code will need to continue to evolve with it. The work to date has reflected a very constructive and cooperative effort between the central banks and the market. And I would particularly like to acknowledge the enormous time and energy contributed by David Puth and the Market Participants Group, as well as the team of my fellow central bankers, including Cindy. All of us recognise the need to restore the public's faith in the FX market and the value of the global code in assisting that process, and also in helping improve market functioning and confidence in the market. So let me finish with three things to take away with you. I would very much ask that you read the FX code when it is released on May the 25th. I would hope that you adapt your business where appropriate to conform with the principles of the global code. And thirdly, I would hope that you would ask your FX counterparties whether they are committed to following the principles of the code as well. So with that, let me finish there and happy to take some questions.
So any questions from the audience? No? Well, I have a question for you. So last look, there was a lively debate just before your presentation about the last look, and the three of our panelists agreed that it is an undesirable feature of the market. So can you please comment on why is it included in the code and allowed to still be in place?
Yeah, well, I suspected that question. I'm not sure how many of you all have seen the code. So the way the last look is described in the code is that basically we do not see trading in the last look window as consistent with good practice in the market, as likely consistent with good practice in the market. As I mentioned earlier, there is widely held views across the market. The panel you had before reflects one end of the spectrum of those views. At least I know one person on that panel does. But there are other views in the market. We are, I think, not a long way away from the position you just described. That discussion is going to continue after the release of the code. And as that discussion takes place, I would expect there's some likelihood that where the code is at the moment will evolve with respect to last look. But as it stands at the moment, what we're basically saying is trading on the basis of information received during the last look window is not likely consistent with good market practice. So, as I said, I don't see that as miles away from the position I suspect was just articulated. It is not exactly where it was, but as I said, this is a wide-ranging debate across the market, which is still in a state of flux.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you very much, Mr. Debell. I really appreciate your talk on the Global Code. RBC is actually a very active participant in the Global Code. Our global head of foreign exchange, Ed Monahan, was a big part of the electronification piece of the Global Code. So thank you very much for your talk. I just want to ask a question in terms of you talked about principle-based and rule-based. How would you enforce the Global Code in a market participant? When I started in the foreign exchange market, your word was your bond, and we accepted that. But in this day and age, you know, we're talking about regulation, legality, and now it's the global code. How will you actively enforce this global code once it comes out. If it's a principle-based code, yes, people who started back in the foreign exchange markets would actively accept that. But in this day and age, like, how would you actively enforce it? That's what I'd like to know. And another cheeky question, what do you think about the Australian economy?
I'm not going to answer that question. I'll answer your first one, which is a very good question. So how would I enforce it? I'm not a regulator, so I can't enforce it. And that is certainly a challenge. In the end, as I said, this is a voluntary code, but there are a number of mechanisms which got out there to try and get people to adhere to it. I'd use the word adhere, which is slightly different to enforce. In terms of enforcement, though, I mean, it's the securities regulators who, by and large, who have those enforcement powers, and to varying degrees, the securities regulators in the different jurisdictions are going to use the code. So I know in my own jurisdiction here in Australia, ASIC is likely to use the code as part of its surveillance of FX trading activities. And the FCA, as I said, is actively considering embedding the code in the senior managers regime, which I think in both those two instances gets you slightly more in the direction of enforcement. But as you said, previously in the market, your word was your bond, and obviously that worked as far as it did. I suppose what we're trying to do is establish a common set of understanding as to what good market practice is. And a fair bit of the discipline, I think, comes from the market itself and having an understanding as to what is good market practice and what isn't, and calling out the behaviour of your counterparties if it isn't. Now, you can say, well, that only gets you so far, but in the end, we could only go as far as the scope we are given. We aren't regulators, most of us at least, as central banks. But we've put in place something which, if regulators felt so inclined, can pick up and use to greater enforce discipline in the market. And they have more powers than we do in that respect. But I do, you know, what I suppose we're ending up doing is a combination of market-based adherence mechanisms. Some chunk of it comes from peer pressure. If you're not going to be on our our counterparty trading list at Reserve Bank of Australia because of your failure to adhere to the code, you know, you can make that business decision yourself. But we'll see how far that goes. I'm not thinking that our business in the FX market is so large that people are going to be that fussed about it from the straight turnover point of view, but I think the reputational considerations are not irrelevant or not trivial. But in the end, it's a whole suite of adherence mechanisms. It is a voluntary code, it is principles-based, it is not rules-based, and it is not regulation, in part reflecting the remit that we have, which as central banks, by and large, we're not regulators.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. DeBell. That's all the time we have. Give him a round of applause.